Welcome, members and guests, to the December 12th program of the City Club of Eugene, Transforming the Campus, Comprehensive Sexual Violence Prevention and Response Efforts at the University of Oregon. Thank you for joining us. Greetings to our broadcast television and radio audience. I'm Marlene Nesri, City Club President. Our sponsors today are Evans, Elder & Brown, the University of Oregon, and KLCC. Special thanks go to KPFF Consulting Engineers for supplying our office space and to KLCC Radio for airing these programs at 6:30 on Monday nights and for archiving the podcasts on their site. We're very pleased to welcome another returning member today, Bob Warren. And a quick reminder that we host nearly 50 original nonpartisan programs every year. If you believe with us that civic engagement is the lifeblood of democracy, please join us. We welcome donors, sponsors, members, volunteers, students, anyone who has a stake in community life. We also welcome your contributions to our new Special Events Fund, which we're kicking off this spring with a program by the first female justice of the United States Supreme Court, the Honorable Sandra Day O'Connor. Now for today's program, Transforming the Campus, Comprehensive Sexual Violence Prevention and Response Efforts at the University of Oregon. Coordinated by Karen Hyatt, this program offers the second detailed look this fall at an issue that affects all of us, sexual violence. The earlier program focused on campus culture as surveyed by UO researchers. Now we'll hear from university staff working directly to improve the situation. Please join me in welcoming Cheryl Eister, Associate Dean of Students, Abigail Leader, Director of Experiential Education and Prevention Initiatives, Carrie Frazee, Director of Sexual Violence Prevention and Education, and Renee DeSattel, Director of Crisis Intervention and Sexual Violence Support Services. Thank you.
So we're quite appreciative of the City Club committing to not just one presentation, but two panel presentations this year on the critical issue of sexual violence, an issue that is affecting our numerous institutions in our society, including our military, our prison systems, our faith-based communities, our K-12 educational systems, and our college and university campuses. A decade ago, an invitation to a panel of higher educational professionals like us presenting on sexual violence would have been considered quite unusual unless we were presenting at one of our own professional conferences. With the heightened visibility of sexual violence in the national and local media today, it is important to know that the rates of sexual violence now are not that much different than 25 years ago. A report just released yesterday from the U.S. Department of Justice confirms that the rates of rape and sexual assault for both students at universities and non-students ages 18 to 24 are not significantly different between 1997 and 2013. Sadly, there are thousands of individuals in this age group impacted by this issue. Our society invests a lot of time blaming individuals that have been victimized. Victims have been struggling in reporting, and offenders often go undetected and too often are not held accountable even when they are detected. My position as Associate Dean of Students at the University of Oregon requires me to be part anticipator and part problem solver, identifying barriers that get in the way of our students being successful. First, we want to give you the backdrop for the sexual violence prevention and response efforts at the university. About 12 years ago, I, along with a couple of colleagues, began an attempt to solve a complex problem on the campus, the issue of sexual violence. As we spoke with our colleagues across the country, it was clear to us that the UO was not alone in trying to understand this issue and that the other institutions were also struggling. It was about that same time Congress was appropriating funding to campuses, so I decided to write and was able to secure federal grant funding, thinking that through funding and new initiatives, we could make progress with this issue. I quickly came to the conclusion that this public health epidemic was a problem occurring in sweeping proportions in our society, that it was deeply connected to social, cultural, gender, and power issues, and it was going to take a lot more than grant funding and an additional staff member to try and shift our culture and solve the problem. At the UO, we've assumed a leadership role in preventing sexual violence. We know from the research on college campuses from the Center for Disease Control and the White House that 1 in 5 women is sexually assaulted in college. We also have studies from our own campus from Professor Jennifer Fried and her colleagues that support these statistics and suggest that rates may even be somewhat higher. The vast majority of information indicates that most sexual assaults are by someone known to the survivor. We want to be able to contribute to examining, assessing, and solving the problem. One common denominator with all of the research is that we are talking about human beings, our students, and we believe that even one victimized student is one too many. As we engage with you today, it should be quite clear that the University of Oregon is not indifferent or in denial that sexual violence is a problem on our campus, that we understand the scope of the problem, that we take the problem very seriously, and that the problem has no place at our institution. It should also be clear that there are no easy answers. It is a very complicated issue and requires a multifaceted approach. In recent years, we've undertaken a wide range of efforts to strengthen our approach to prevention and to response. Prevention of sexual violence with college students is critical, and according to the CDC, prevention can reduce the incidence of sexual violence. We have highly trained staff members here today who apply innovative and effective prevention strategies in different types of ways. They do this by ensuring diverse methods of delivery of programs, ensuring our programs provide enough intervention to produce desired effects, making sure our programs are supported by the research and tailored to our specific subpopulations of student groups, and making an effort to evaluate our results. In the 70s, 80s, and 90s, on many college campuses, there were lots of emphasis on women and how women could protect themselves from sexual violence. This emphasis on women included buddy systems and carrying mace and relying on campus women's centers to assume the burden of being the primary place in solving the issue for the campus. I fondly recall Brandy, one of my staff members who happened to be the director of the women's center, gently reminding me, "Cheryl, this is not a women's issue. It is everyone's issue." From that point on, my colleagues and I were determined to ensure that we heighten the visibility and undertake this problem as a collective responsibility. We also want to note here, survivors we work with do not identify as women only. Our services on our campus are designed for all students, including our LGBTQIA community and men that are victimized. Now for our response efforts. When an unfortunate act of violence does occur to one of our students, our staff members work to provide a caring and comprehensive response with the highest standards. We strive to honor a student's choice when they are harmed while balancing the safety to our greater campus community. The students we work with, they want confidentiality, they want transparency about resources, about their rights, and about information that will empower them to make the decisions regarding what has happened to them. We know from the research that most college students do not report incidents of sexual violence. We believe that if students can feel safe in disclosing an incident and have compassionate, effective services, our numbers for reporting on our campus are going to continue to increase. The April 2011 Dear Colleague letter issued by the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights clarified and reminded university campuses of their responsibility to respond to sexual violence. Many months prior to this federal reminder, the U had already established a multidisciplinary team to strengthen our protocols and response systems. Since that time, we have a new infrastructure of staff members that have greatly enhanced the services and support we provide to students. Our new positions include 2 crisis and support staff members, 2 equal opportunity specialists and Title IX investigators, a detective sergeant in our police department who specializes in sexual violence, an additional student conduct investigator. All these staff members have been wonderful to join our partnership on our campus. In addition, our counseling and testing center has created a new staff of team members that have extensive training with trauma treatment, and our university health center has trained practitioners who are able to do sexual assault forensic exams right on site. Each day, we work in partnership with many colleagues across the campus, including our student conduct office, our Office for Affirmative Action and Equal Opportunity, the University Police Department, University Health Center, and the University Counseling and Testing Center to create the best possible environment for students with these issues. We also value the services and support that our community partners, Sexual Assault Support Services, Women's Space, and Eugene Police Department, the support that they provide to our students. We have unparalleled support from our Vice President for Student Life, who's a practicing clinical psychologist herself, as well as our university president and the rest of his executive leadership team. We are excited that many of the recent recommendations from the President's External Review Panel and the University Senate Task Force to address sexual violence and survivor support reinforce as well as enhance the work that we've been doing for years. We are also excited about our future collaborations with faculty and campus partners and community partners in being a national leader on this issue. I'm delighted to introduce one of my first staff members on this panel, Abigail Leader, who works tirelessly with our prevention efforts at the university.
Hi. So I've been working with the prevention of sexual violence since arriving on campus in 2005. I was hired as part of the federal grant from the Office of Violence Against Women that Cheryl mentioned, and after the grant expired, my position was institutionalized. And since that time, myself and many others have been working continuously to address the complex issue of sexual assault and dating violence on our campus, and have employed a multitude of approaches in our prevention efforts. We're very clear that preventing sexual violence in our community needs to be addressed in multifaceted and comprehensive ways, and that it's a social issue that's really going to take all of us to make a difference. I'm going to spend some time today sharing with you about my work with the Sexual Wellness Advocacy Team, which is one of the components of the university's efforts to address sexual violence, and then Carrie's going to talk more about some of our other initiatives. The Sexual Wellness Advocacy Team, also known as SWAT, is a peer education program that utilizes interactive theater and other experiential education techniques to address the issue of sexual assault, consent, and healthy relationships. So I work with 18 peer educators from diverse backgrounds and academic disciplines and multiple gender identities, and we present interactive workshops throughout the school year to classes, fraternities and sororities, residence halls, athletic teams, student groups, and other campus organizations. Our work is based on the premise that sexual assault is culturally constructed and that it's a choice made by perpetrators who are often supported and tolerated by their peers, in a culture where the sexualization and exploitation of women and girls is normalized. And so our job is to change those norms and model appropriate behavior in dynamic and student-focused ways. In the summer, we produce a 60-minute long play, which is a mandatory part of introduction, so all 4,000 incoming students see the performance as a part of their orientation process. The play is a really accessible way for students to begin to understand the complex dynamics of sexual assault in a campus environment. In the play, we portray a group of friends grappling with sexual assault and one of their friends commits at a party, and the characters get to explore how to both support the survivor and also hold their friend accountable for his behavior. During the school year, the peer educators that I work with are enrolled in an upper division leadership class and are thoroughly trained in sexual violence dynamics, the intersection of sexual assault and other forms of oppression, facilitation techniques, acting, and public speaking. And then the group and I create experiential and interactive presentations that address multiple aspects of a prevention. And again, we present those to student groups across campus throughout the academic year. We found that the dynamic, interactive, theatrical components of our work really engage the students and help them think about the issue in complex ways, more so than if they were just receiving a training through a PowerPoint by an administrator. The theory is that by giving the workshop participants the skills to understand sexual violence and provide compassionate responses to disclosures, that we're creating a less supportive atmosphere on campus for sexual violence to take place, and also reducing the likelihood of perpetration. So we begin our presentations with building empathy for survivors through experiential activities, and we present a monologue from a survivor of a sexual assault. We also use a technique called hot seating, where we have three characters involved in the sexual assault directly interact with the audience and talk about the situation from their perspective. Each of these characters have misconceptions about sexual violence, as many people do, and we ask the audience to address these misconceptions directly with the characters and have a conversation with them and identify their problematic thinking. This technique makes the issue more tangible and gives students the opportunity to see how common myths about sexual violence play out in real life. We spend time in the presentation defining the concept of consent and how to make sure you have consent in sexual situations. And we make sure that everyone understands the UO Conduct Code definition of consent, which includes the term explicit consent, which is voluntary, non-coerced, and clear communication indicating a willingness to engage in a particular act. Additionally, in our workshops, we include a whole section of bystander intervention skills training based on the theory that all members of the community have a role in shifting the norms to prevent sexual violence. So instead of relating to audience members as potential perpetrators and victims, we know that everyone can be part of a potential bystander and can help take ownership in solving the problem. We create scenarios of typical college students face at parties or in residence halls, and then invite audience members up on stage and give them the opportunity to actually practice the skills necessary to intervene. Bystander intervention training is being recognized nationally as a promising prevention practice, and we know that our model of bystander intervention is producing results because in 2013, a graduate student studied the effectiveness of our work with fraternity men on campus and found that even 4 months later, bystander intervention behavior had significantly increased for students who had participated in a workshop where we were practicing these techniques. While this work with interactive theater and peer education is just one component of a more comprehensive prevention program, it speaks to our intention to really engage student leaders in the educational process and develop innovative, accessible, and relevant education for our students. So now I'm going to turn it over to Carrie to talk more about some of our other prevention efforts.
Good afternoon. I'm Carrie Frazee, and as you've heard, Cheryl and Abigail have paved the way on the UO campus for sexual violence prevention and education, and it's truly a pleasure to work with such dedicated people. I, too, am committed to educating the campus community about the issues surrounding sexual violence and adapting prevention strategies that resonate with our students. Sexual violence is not a new issue, but students are becoming more aware of the statistics and prevalence. The last thing we want is for the statistics to drive the students into a place of silence. Instead, we want them to feel equipped and empowered to change the culture where sexual assaults occur to a culture where everyone is truly respected and cared for. For a comprehensive approach to sexual violence prevention, we want to ensure that students have multiple points of contact with this information to fully retain the content. We also know students learn and receive information differently, and we want to make sure that our efforts are diverse and relative to capture all students. To do this, we offer workshops and presentations along with other educational initiatives across campus. In addition to attending the SWAT presentations that Abigail talked about, new students under the age of 21 take mandatory online courses addressing alcohol and substance abuse in addition to sexual violence. We also cater our programming to different student populations based on their needs. Some of these specific populations include all new students, residence life, LGBTQIA students, international students, fraternity and sorority life, and other ASUO organizations. Students also see and/or participate in a variety of awareness campaigns throughout the year. One example from this fall is the Red Zone campaign. Research suggests that the first 6 weeks of transition to a university campus are when a new student is the most vulnerable. We call this time frame the red zone because there is also an increased rate of sexual violence incidents. Perhaps you saw the display of red flags in front of the Knight Library a few weeks ago. Every year, the ASUO Women's Center, in collaboration with campus and community partners, displays these flags as a part of our red zone campaign. Each one of the flags in the courtyard represents a survivor. Research tells us that 1 in 5 women and 1 in 16 men become survivors within their college years. Applying these national statistics to a campus the size of the University of Oregon would yield 3,302 survivors. As you may imagine, when students see over 3,000 flags potentially representing their peers, conversation happens, and it's difficult to ignore that sexual violence is a real concern, both here at the university and across the globe. There are other larger campaigns throughout the year, including but not limited to Sexual Assault Awareness Month, Sexual Violence Prevention Week, Take Back the Night, and other consent messaging. But prevention is more than awareness and education about a problem. Prevention is about training students with the skills they need to make the campus climate one where sexual violence cannot survive. We know telling students not to hurt each other is not enough. Saying they should practice bystander intervention is not enough. So we are working on ways to equip the students to overcome their very real social pressures and create a safe space where sexual violence is not tolerated. Students want tangible examples of what they should say and do, so we incorporate relatable applications of bystander intervention in our prevention programs. You may have heard about the White House charging the nation to take ownership in ending sexual violence by rolling out the It's On Us campaign. It's on us as a society to prevent, intervene, and stop sexual assault. We are partnering with a national charge saying that it is on us and adapting a local component for students to create videos to show what It's On Us looks like within their communities. This Ducks Do Something video challenge is an opportunity to show that ducks interrupt, disrupt, and divert when they see something wrong. Ducks say something, ducks do something in the face of sexual violence. Over this past year, there's been significant momentum initiated by students to prevent sexual violence as well. One example is the formation of OASA, Organization Against Sexual Assault. They are a student-run organization out of the ASUO and are working on campaigns to end sexual violence. Additionally, the Fraternity and Sorority Life Task Force for Sexual Violence Prevention has just been created. Research shows that there are several at-risk populations for sexual assault, and fraternity and sorority life is one of them. With this said, the members within the FSL community have been active and are working to make their community more safe. Every chapter on campus has a representative involved in the task force, and we are hopeful for the results. We are currently developing a curriculum and will meet weekly starting in 2015. There's also new momentum within the office as we are creating a 5-year longitudinal plan for sexual violence prevention and education. We are in the preliminary stages of doing a meta-analysis of best practices for prevention initiatives, and we'll use the research to see how our current prevention methods fit in and also what we are missing. We've reached out to the leadership within campus organizations to establish their identified needs related to prevention and the response of sexual violence. Once we have a more comprehensive understanding of the needs, student identified, research informed, and presidentially recommended, we will create and implement the longitudinal plan. Our goal is to ensure that every initiative stemming from this office is both research supported and assessed for effectiveness. Overall, our goal is to challenge students to create a culture of respect on campus, specifically around the issue of sexual violence. We are committed to educate these students, provide resources, and empower them to truly make a difference on this campus. Thank you again for this opportunity to share with you today, and I'll pass it over to Renee for response.
Hello, everyone. My name is Renee Desitel, and I serve as the Director of Crisis Intervention and Sexual Violence Support Services at the UO. As my colleagues have shared, our first responsibility is to try to prevent sexual violence before it occurs through comprehensive prevention programming. Unfortunately, changing culture on any campus is a monumental task, and thus we know that sexual violence will still occur. When it does happen, we are committed to providing a swift, compassionate, and integrated institutional response. My program and staff work with students who have experienced any form of sexual harassment or violence, including sexual assault, dating or domestic violence, stalking, and other types of gender-based bullying. We are on call 24/7, 365 days a year in order to provide immediate assistance to students in crisis. Our primary role is to ensure that students receive every possible resource, support, and accommodations they may need in order to feel safe on our campus and continue with their academic program. We inform students of available options regarding medical services, forensic evidence collection, and reporting to law enforcement. Our goal is to ensure that we honor the needs of the student who has been hurt, as well as protect the rest of the campus community. Students are provided information regarding the University of Oregon's administrative process for holding people accountable, the criminal process, their rights in both of those processes, and all support services on and off of campus. Our office works as their advocate throughout the entire process and will help a student in any way possible as long as the student would like. When the university first becomes aware that a student on our campus may have experienced sexual assault or any other type of gender-based discrimination, my office will reach out immediately to provide comprehensive and integrated services. A typical situation that my office would encounter is receiving a report from a professor that his student disclosed in office hours that they had been sexually assaulted the previous weekend. My office would immediately reach out to the student within minutes to ensure that any current safety issues are addressed, such as an unsafe living situation or the perpetrator having current or continued access to the victim. We would also immediately connect them with health services who can provide prophylactics against sexually transmitted infections, as well as options to prevent pregnancy. They can also choose whether or not they would want to receive a forensic evidence collection in order to preserve evidence for a possible criminal investigation. In addition, many of the students we work with are very concerned about the impact that the the situation has on their academics. Most students in these situations are missing classes, tests, and perhaps failing behind in their classes. We work to immediately alleviate these academic concerns by providing accommodations to ensure that they can continue and thrive within their academic program. This can mean getting extensions with assignments, dropping classes beyond the deadlines, getting refunds for courses, or changing grading options. We also work to ensure that the student does not face any financial consequences as a result of the assault, such as not meeting requirements for federal financial aid or needing additional assistance to move to a safer living situation. We have recently been granted a victim assistance fund, which we have been using to help students who are in need of resources to find safety or to continue at the university. While we are working on these immediate academic accommodations and mental concerns, we're also informing the student about available options to report the incident either to the university, to the police, to both agencies, or to neither. We will work with the student through the entire process, whether it be the criminal process or the university's conduct process, to ensure that the student is afforded all their rights as a victim, that the process is prompt, and that they are provided with all the accommodations that are afforded to them by federal law. I often explain our services by saying that we move mountains for students. I tell my students that if they are having any problem, either within or outside of the university, that we can do something to fix it, and almost always we can. In addition to the direct services I just described, our program works actively with on and off campus partners to increase coordination of care and support to students. We also provide consultation and trainings to students, faculty, and staff on sexual violence issues and response procedures. Outreach is conducted throughout the year to increase awareness of options for students to receive help and/or report the incident. I wanted to share with you a few highlights of our program within the last year. Within the past year and a half, our program has provided services to over 200 students who have experienced a variety of situations, including sexual assaults, sexual harassment, dating or domestic violence, and stalking. Cases range from minor reports of verbal harassment in the residence halls to physical and sexual assaults. We have also launched a 24-hour hotline this year, and it's 541-346-SAFE, which is staffed by licensed counselors to provide resources, supports, and reporting options to students. This means that a student can receive confidential support and intervention 24/7 just by calling our hotline. Very few universities have taken this step to ensure that students can receive immediate help for sexual assault, so this is a very exciting development. In April, we launched a new student-friendly website, which is safe.uoregon.edu, and this is designed to help students navigate their options in reporting and receiving help. Between our hotline at 346-SAFE and our website at safe.uoregon.edu, we hope that if students can just remember the word SAFE, they may remember how to get help if they or someone they know has experienced sexual violence. We have also published a Help for Students handbook, which was developed this year in coordination with campus partners to serve as a comprehensive resource guide for the campus community. The combination of the efforts I just described may show our campus as a leader in providing a comprehensive and student-centered response to sexual violence issues. We are now to the head of the curve on what we provide to students relative to other universities. So this is the conclusion of our presentation, and we would like to thank you for your attention, this important topic.
Thank you, Cheryl Eister, Abigail Leader, Carrie Frazee, and Renee Desautels. We'll break for a few minutes of discussion right now and come back with with audience questions.
You're tuned to KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend, KMPQ Roseburg. We're on the web at klcc.org, on Facebook and Twitter, and we have an app for your smartphone or tablet. This is KLCC, NPR for Oregonians.
Welcome back to this December 12th City Club programming, Transforming the Campus, Comprehensive Sexual Violence Prevention and Response Efforts at the University of Oregon. Our presenters are Cheryl Eister, Abigail Leader, Carrie Frazee, and Renee Desautels. City Club members, please identify yourself before asking your questions. Thank you.
My name is Arnold Ismack. I've been a City Club member for 16 years. And I have a question for any of our speakers today. In light of the recent disclosure that the Rolling Stone story about the University of Virginia rape incident has collapsed as false. What do you feel could or should be done to protect those who were falsely accused of sexual assault?
Okay, so the question is, what are we doing or what should be done for those accused falsely of sexual assault? And I think it's important to know that on a university campus, we have a very different system in place for accused students than the court system or the legal system. And students have the opportunity on our campus, whether they're victims, we can connect them to our UO domestic violence clinic, and then if they're accused students, they have the opportunity to use an attorney through our Office of Student Advocacy. So students have rights and they have advisors that can help them through processes. Along with that, anytime a student, if a student was accused on our campus, the investigations that are done by very impartial investigators. In other words, Renee would handle a case with advocacy with a student, but the investigators come from another office that actually do the investigation, and then the students have the opportunity and the rights to have attorneys or advisors with them through that process. So I believe we've got a system that does really take into consideration the rights of any student, any accused student. And not just for sexual violence, but for any kind of issue at the university.
I also just want to add, this is Abigail Leader, that we know that the majority of assaults are actually never reported, and that the prevalence of false reporting is actually extremely low. FBI statistics place it around 2 to 8%. So it's approximately the same as any other crime, and it's actually the false fear of false reports that keep a lot of people coming forward. And it provides a barrier to make the victim or the person coming forward really needing to prove their case, even to their friends or to the people that they're talking to about this, to Rolling Stone, to others. And so I just want to make sure that we're acknowledging that we do know that false reporting can happen. It does, and that's why Cheryl talked about those things, but also recognizing that there are a lot of serious barriers for people to actually come forward and tell their stories. And in relation to Rolling Stone, we know that there were discrepancies in this story. We don't actually, it hasn't been proven that it was a false report. Mm-hmm.
I'm John Anik. I'm a City Club member since 2003, so compared to 16-year veteran Arnold, I'm just a pup. Okay, my question is regarding various groups at the University of Oregon. Are there groups where members are more likely to be perpetrators of sexual violence? It's members of athletic teams, certain living units, that sort of thing.
Well, I'm going to have Abigail answer some of this, but there are groups that there's more research on that we know of, and so we can use some of the information that we, you know, when we're working with tailoring, prevention, and response kind of educational materials with our students, we have a lot of research that guides us. And we know that students in certain subpopulations, depending on, we know that we have research out there on our fraternity and sorority life systems. And it's not just local research, but there's quite a bit of national research out there. And there's yet a lot of research to be done on organizations. And so I'd like to kind of turn it over to Abigail to talk about what we do with fraternities and sororities or some of our subpopulations.
Sure. I mean, I think that we do tend to try to focus on different populations and really meet the needs of those populations and ask students what they believe in their communities needs to be done and incorporate all of that into our training efforts with those different communities. And so we do know that there are some higher risk populations and recently we just created videos for international students because we know that they are 13% of our population and are at a higher risk for victimization and sometimes potentially perpetration. And we need to make sure that we are doing our best to outreach and to those students. So we made some videos that talked about all of our services and translated those into four different languages with subtitles. And so, yes, there are populations that we are really doing our best to work with directly.
Hi, I'm Raisa Maddox, representing Capella Market. We've been City Club members since 2014. We've heard a lot in the news about rape statistics and the impact that they can have on enrollment at a university. My question is probably a three-part question. How are those statistics compiled? I'm assuming the U of O would be similar to any other university in how they're compiled. How accurate you feel that they would be, knowing that many of these crimes will go unreported. And I don't know if any of you is willing to talk about whether you feel that there is pressure brought to bear from anyone to keep those statistics low for the University of Oregon.
Well, I'm going to answer the last question first. I absolutely, and I think all my colleagues would agree with me that there is no pressure. We are trying to get our numbers up. And so if there's anything that comes out of here today, increased reporting doesn't necessarily mean that there's more. I mean, it just means people, to us, it means people are feeling safer in coming to us and letting us know that these issues are occurring. So I'd like to just put that out there, first of all. And our stats, the way that our stats are compiled, we are federally obligated to do the things that every other institution, if any institution that receives federal funding has obligations to the federal government, and in that we have our own Cleary analyst that compiles our statistics. We are very diligent about meeting regularly. Renee and I spend at least once a month or sometimes twice a month with our campus partners, with our public safety, with our affirmative action office, with our counseling center, with all of our different areas on campus that collect stats, making sure that the statistics that we're not replicating, you know, in counting incidents more than once, but making sure that the accurate stats that we have are we're trying to be transparent with the public. We want people to know what's happening. You will notice that we have had a jump in our stats. And again, I will come back to the jump in our stats, we believe, is something that is a good thing, that people are finally feeling comfortable and safe to report. So I hope I answered part of your question. How accurate are they? Are they compiled? And is there pressure to us?
And I could also add on, is there pressure on this? So I have been at the U of O for now a year and a half. Prior to this, I was at other universities and nonprofit agencies. And coming into the university, I really realized that there's actually a bit of a pressure of we want our reporting to go up. One of the great things about all of the recent attention nationwide and locally on sexual assault is I think that there's been a bit of a shift with universities from perhaps having high numbers creating alarm bells to really looking at low numbers creating alarm bells, that apparently maybe that institution isn't doing their job, that maybe they're not looking at reports. And so I think there's really been a shift on a lot of campuses, including ours, where if we have high numbers, it means we're probably doing something right in reaching out to our students.
Hi, I'm Paul Thompson, a City Club member over the last decade or so. I guess this is a question for Abigail. Our table was interested in your experiential videos and skits and so on. So let's pretend that we're watching one of those, and it's about a blatant sexual assault by a male on a female. Is the last scene of that the male being carried away in handcuffs? And if not, why not?
Wow. Let's see how I should answer this. I guess we don't necessarily show graphic situations, but in the summer play, we do talk about a sexual assault that happens, and we have the perspective of the perpetrator and the perspective of the survivor told, and then grappling with what to do, and we, at the end, it ends in him going through the conduct code, and so. And we don't go through that resolution because we know that every situation is different. It's a good question and a good point. I think that we could potentially work with it, but I think right now we want to make sure that we're not saying, because we know that not every situation ends that way. We know that not everyone is held accountable in that way, and that the criminal justice system is unfortunately has pretty low rates of conviction for people actually being held accountable for sexual violence. Anyone add to that?
Well, I think the other thing to just keep in mind, the difference again in our students would most likely be suspended. We can't put students in, you know, in prison, or that's the work of law enforcement. And so we're not authorized to determine whether a law has been broken, but what we can do is look at whether a conduct situation has been violated on our campus, and then we react to that. And that's especially if the student is only going through the conduct system. There are times when students will use both the conduct system and the law enforcement or the criminal system, and we would encourage students, they have choices, and we would encourage them to do any. So walking away with a student in handcuffs, that's not something that we would necessarily, you know, we don't adjudicate in a way that puts a student in jail.
I'm Mary Layton, a member since 2006, and I have a question from a guest at our table. She wonders, to what extent is assertiveness training available to change women's capacity for making things happen the way they want them to happen?
So there is some women's self-defense happening on campus, and I think in both of the recommendations for the Senate, from the University Senate Task Force and the President's Review Committee, there is recommendation for even more self-defense training on campus. I think it's a valuable component. I think we need to be addressing this work from many different angles. And that we also want to make sure that we are not in any way saying that if you didn't defend yourself or that you didn't fight back, that in some way it was your fault. And so for the last, you know, 40 years of prevention training on college campuses, there's been a lot of focus on what women can do to keep themselves safer. And now the shift is being more towards what can we all do to create an environment that is free from sexual violence.
I just want to add that we do have an amazing faculty member on our campus, Jocelyn Hollander, who does a lot of women's self-defense type of training, and it's really about empowerment. It's not just the whole karate kicking kind of thing, but it's really talking about assertiveness, empowerment, having confidence, developing awareness, you know, and there are some physical techniques that go along with that. But she's been doing some amazing research and has found that definitely some effectiveness with her research. And so that's something you'll notice if you've had an opportunity to look at the President's External Review Panel recommendations and or the University Senate Task Force recommendations. The task force, I know, recommended that we do and consider much more of that kind of training as well. And we would all support that.
My name is Janet Calvert, and I'm asking this question also for Cappy, and I may throw in one of my own. I was wondering, what is happening at the university campuses that addresses the alcohol culture that seems to be, in many cases, at the crux of both the women's response and the men's response to social situations?
That's a great question. I think, Renee, do you want to take that?
Yes. So this is Renee, and we do know that there has been shown to be a correlation between alcohol and sexual assault. But it's important to note that research tells us, as well as practice, that perpetrators of sexual assault typically aren't using much alcohol themselves, but are instead using it as a tool to incapacitate other students. Oftentimes we know that perpetrators are intentionally seeking out victims who are intoxicated and taking advantage of that vulnerability. Alcohol doesn't create rapists. For instance, there's a misconception that sexual assaults on campuses are committed by otherwise good young men who just had too much to drink. And that's just simply not the case. It's important to recognize that for many of us, including most of us, there's no amount of alcohol that we can consume that would cause us to sexually assault somebody. As a society, we don't allow alcohol to be used as an excuse for the decision to drink and drive, and we shouldn't use it as an excuse for sexual assault. And that's something that we deal with every day around some of these thoughts around alcohol and sexual assault. And we also do a lot of prevention programming around alcohol, because we do know there is an association, but we try to also be careful on how we talk about these issues.
Follow up on that. You say alcohol is not an excuse, and yet you're saying many of the assaulters are not drinking alcohol. So is that an excuse for being a victim?
Well, typically what we're seeing is that they frame it as we were all drinking. But in reality, when an investigation is conducted, it turns out that maybe, yes, the perpetrator was drinking on one drink all night and feeding shots to the person that they were going to perpetrate against. And so it is used as an excuse, oh, I perhaps was drunk, but in reality, when the investigation is concluded, no, they really weren't. They were at a party and there was an illusion that they may have been, but that really wasn't the situation. Does that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was wondering on the other side of the fence, too. Mm-hmm. Is it an excuse for the women to say, I was drinking, I don't know what happened?
I wouldn't say it's an excuse. I would say that in my practice of working with sexual assault survivors for the last 10 years, is that we all know that people can have drunk sex and possibly regret it, but what we do know is that they're not coming and reporting a sexual assault afterwards. Reporting a sexual assault is one of the most awful things someone can go through, and that's not the type of thing that someone would typically go through if they have sex that they perhaps regretted.
Hi, I'm Marilyn Milne, and I think it's great all these programs you've got in place and probably more to come. It seems the university would have an advantage in being able to put resources into programs and be responsive. It seems you would also have a disadvantage in that students might view you as bureaucratic or slow in responding, that kind of thing. Is there a university out there that is serving as a role model for all universities and the work that they want to do? And is there someone you're modeling programs after?
Well, first of all, I think we have one of the best experiential programs in the country, and I'm being very biased about that, but I think Abigail and the work that she's doing, in fact, and she and her students were just invited to a national conference, and they're the only student group that will be presenting there in February on this very topic. So I really believe that we've got a hidden gem on our campus that is not very visible that I'd love to be able to get more visibility with. I think that there are many campuses that have struggled with this use. I think there are many campuses that do great prevention work, great, and then there are some that do great response work. Is there a campus out there that does it all? Because there are so many being investigated, even my colleagues that have done some amazing work and have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on prevention and response efforts, they're still being looked at by the federal government for one of those students or campuses that has violated a Title IX requirement or Title IX. And so you can do the best work that you can and still not be doing enough around some of these issues. There are some great work that we're looking at. University of New Hampshire has a bystander intervention program that has some great things coming out of it. University of Michigan has some wonderful response kinds of programs and services that they do, and they do also some great prevention work. There are many campuses that we look at for bits and pieces. Quite honestly, our staff get called on quite frequently across the country by other campuses as consultants to their campus on what we're doing to enhance their programs. And so I think we go to a lot of professional conferences and are exposed to a lot of what our colleagues are doing, and we are able to engage with them, and we also learn from the research. We're learning. We currently have right now several research projects going, one within our office looking at our response systems just to see, are we really giving effective services. And it's making us absolutely feel vulnerable, but at the same time, we want to be better than what we're currently doing. We want to have the optimal programs and services in place for our students. And so even we're doing something that I don't know anybody else doing on that respect, in terms of really digging down into all of our services and programs. So I'm hoping that was an answer.
Yeah, I think as a follow-up in terms of having a voice as an administrator versus a student, I think students love to hear and see what other students are doing. And I brought up that video challenge that's happening, but I'm also working with different organizations and trying to get, in my needs assessment, hearing what their needs are. What are their perceived needs in terms of prevention? What are their perceived needs and how they can respond? Do they even feel safe responding? So trying to get the student voice in all the prevention efforts and response efforts that we're doing is so valuable, because students want to see what each other are doing. And right now, our biggest issue that we're coming up against is the social pressures. We say, okay, why don't you tell that person to stop drinking, or tell that person not to hurt that girl? And so we have this language that we are expecting of them, but they need the skills, and they want to see how their friends are doing it. They want to follow their friends and their peers and feel empowered, not from administrators, but amongst each other. And so we're working with students to have that voice in our prevention and response efforts.
Dan Bryant, City Club member since 96. I hope this will be a friendly question, but I have to ask, given that we have four women on this panel, where are the men?
We knew that was going to come up.
Yeah, well, and specifically, I want to ask, given the incident we saw at the end of the basketball season last year that led to the dismissal of three men from the men's basketball team, are you getting support from the athletic department and from the men's teams? And so just speak a little bit about where the men are on this.
So we do engage with men every day on our campus, and we're one of the few campuses in the country with a men's center who has taken this issue of sexual violence and done some amazing work with bystander intervention and with some really cool community engagement kind of programs on the campus. So we do have men that we work with, men in different departments. We have, I would say, and I want to just shout out that we have an amazing president who's male, who has really assumed leadership for helping us in our work and has really supported our work every step of the way. And I could say that with our past president as well, with Michael and with Richard and now with Scott. I mean, I feel like we are really, truly, really blessed at the university to have that kind of support. In terms of prevention and men, do you want to talk about a little bit about the prevention issues?
Well, we can both, I guess. I mean, it's actually been interesting with all this social change that's happening. So many men have come to my office. What can we do? What can we do? I've had a flood. It really feels like most of my inbox is men saying, we want to jump on this. And so it's one of these, we don't want to have the problem where we have the research and the statistics that shine negative light on men. But at the same time, I feel like they've taken this and they're coming forward and they want to change that. And so there's been a lot of, I think, really positive momentum from men on campus and students on campus that have been coming to meet with me. I know that also in the residence halls that next year they'll be having a full men's program that will be just men you live with in your residence hall that's designed specifically around sexual violence prevention. And so I think that, again, the statistics are harsh, but I really see momentum and change. And so I've been inspired by the people that have come forward.
Just to follow up with that, we know that not all men are perpetrators of sexual violence, and a number of them are very interested in being allies in this work. And the peer education program that I was talking about, there are half of the group are men. And so, yes, and also to answer your other point, just this fall we were able to reach all of the different athletes with our prevention programming and are building even stronger partnerships to do more prevention education with student athletes.
So she's talking every team went through the prevention program with Abigail, and coaches were involved. Some of the coaches were going through the prevention, and I think we feel pretty good about the gaps that we've identified to help strengthen our systems there, and very excited about our future with athletics and with other populations on our campus.
One quick question before we end. Marlene Nesri, City Club member. I'm interested in following up a little bit with the sort of the broader community relationships, especially with the Eugene Police Department and the county sheriffs, and with also with the athletics department and how broadly that impacts our community. How do you see your relationships with those entities changing over this past year, and where are you, what are you aiming for in the coming year in terms of your interactions with law enforcement and with the broader athletic entities?
So I think that one of the things that we have been really trying to do is engage with our community partners, and we work quite frequently with and we work through our University Police Department, and they work also with the Eugene Police Department. But Renee has had quite a bit of contact with survivors and victims that have wanted to go forward and actually report. In fact, we're finding more people wanting to report. The reporting has been quite low over the years, and strengthening our services is allowing us that opportunity to get more involved with them. In terms of athletics, I'm not sure if I understand how that fits with police. I mean, if you could maybe clarify that a little bit more.
Well, I'm just looking at the organizations that are sort of located more in the or a lot in the community at large, and not just the campus geography and communities there, but you know, your impact is huge on this community, and one of the ways that the impact is huge is through the athletics department, and
okay.
You know, and the Eugene Police Department is also a huge player in this evolving dilemma about sexual violence. So
athletics is on board. Athletics is, we consider them to be a partner. We've looked at, you know, some of the gaps that we have and stronger communication between our different areas and departments. And I believe that we have some incredible work ahead of us in terms of, if you look at, we have a new report coming out from the President's External Review Panel that has made some recommendations for us, for our campus, that will have us working even more closely together. And I think athletics is going to step up to the plate and be a part of that, and they want to assume leadership on this issue too. So I'm hoping that answers your question.
Mm-hmm. I think I just also want to say, I mean, from the perspective of doing this work for the last 9 years on campus, I think we are at an amazing and exciting time in terms of the interest and generation. I mean, we, you know, with faculty and staff and students and different organizations, all of you, I mean, and I feel really thankful for the survivors that have come forward nationally and have really been pressuring their schools and the media to take this issue really seriously. And I think, again, for those of us that have been doing this for a while, it feels really wonderful that you all are really beginning to care and take the time and really be invested in this issue. And I think our hope is that that will continue and that it won't just go away and that we keep moving forward as a community.
Well, thank you all so much. We appreciate your input. Thank you for bringing clarity and vision to this important City Club program, Transforming the Campus, Comprehensive Sexual Violence Prevention and Response Efforts at the University of Oregon. Thanks again to our sponsors, Evans, Elder & Brown, University of Oregon, and KLCC. We meet again next for our last program in 2014, next Friday, December 19th, here at the Downtown Athletic Club for the annual Gifts to the City. Lunches for this program can be ordered on City Club's website or by contacting the office. Thank you again so much for joining us today.